All right, Boker Tov. We start the second book of the Torah, Sefer Shmos. In Sefer Shmos, there's one group that keeps figuring in many of the events, and in fact is held to be indispensable for the Gula to take place. To whom am I referring? Women.
But of course.
Of course.
That wasn't even.
Should have known.
That had to be asked.
The Medrash says, "Dorash Rabbi Akiva, Bischar Noshim Tzidkanya Shabbat Hoyvosa Ador Nigali Yisrael Mitzrayim." As a reward for the merit, in the merit of the righteous women of that generation, the Jewish people were redeemed from Egypt. And we see how the Noshim Tzidkanios keep cropping up. They're, in a sense, from the text, peripheral to the story, but in a very profound way, they're indispensable to the story. So this is in the Parsha Aleph Siman Yud Beis of the Medrash Rabbah, Shmos Rabbah, and Rabbi Akiva explains, for example, Umer Asu, what in fact did they do to merit this? Bisho Shehoyu Hochos L'Shov Mayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mezame Lem Dogim Ketanim Yechadeyem. The women, so the men were slaves working in the fields, pyramids. The women would go out to draw water. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would see to it that their pails would be filled with both water and fish, fresh fish. V'shovim mechza mayim mechza dogim. And they would take these two pails, half water, half fish, or one with water, one with fish. Umalichos etzel balayim. And they would bring them to the husbands in the field. V'shovim mechza mayim mechza dogim. And they would draw one half water, one half fish. I'm sorry. V'shov sos lehem shtei kederes achas shel cham and v'achas shel dogim. And they would place these two pots on two separate fires. One of to make it hot water, heat the water, the other to cook the fish. U'machilos oson. And they would give their husbands to drink. I'm sorry, to eat. U'marchitos oson. And they would bathe them. Those were the days. V'sochos oson. Now you know why the Jews look back so nostalgically in Sefer Bamidbar to the days of slavery in Egypt. V'sochos oson, and they would anoint them with oils. U'mashkos oson, and they would give them to drink. V'nizkokos lehem ben shvatoyim, and they would then have relations with them in the midst of the flock. All right. V'chevan shemisabros bo sulavatehen, when they would become pregnant, they would go back to their homes. V'chevan shegiyaz man molidehem hochos v'yolos basodet tachas v'tapuach. And when it came time to deliver, they would go back to the fields under the apple tree. And the Medrash continues how they would then give birth. And this took place despite all the tzaras. Now Rashi at the end of Shmos adds a nuance. I think we discussed this once before, how the kior in the Mishkan was made of mirrors, the mirrors that the women used in Egypt. So Rashi there, Perek Lamaches, Pasuk Ches, explains, B'maros ha-tzavos, b'nos yisroh hayu b'yadon maros shiros b'hen, k'shem yiskashtos. They had mirrors that they used for, you know, beautification purposes. But what was unique about these mirrors is that k'shehayu b'aleim yegeim avodas perech, when the men were doing their servile activities, they would bring them food and drink. They would take their mirrors with them after preparing the meals and serving the meals and cleaning up after the meals. They would then take the mirrors out, they would gaze at the two of them, and they would seduce their husbands. And that's how the husbands did not lose hope. Being slaves, the wives would give them tremendous encouragement. Now, this is a theme which really runs through the entire Sefer and the entire process of Geula. And that's what Rabbi Akiva said, Bischar Noshim Sidkonio Shabosador Nigalu Yisrael Mimitzrayim. Because of those righteous women, the Jewish people were redeemed from Egypt. Now this is made clear at the very beginning. Eila Shmos B'nei Yisrael Habim Mitzrayimo Eis Yaakov Ishu Veso Bo. That these are the names of the children of Israel who went to Egypt with Yaakov. Ishu Veso Bo. What's Ishu Veso? The Chizkuni says, Ish Vishto, man and his wife. Kidichsiv, Milvad Neshev and Yaakov, aside from the wives of Yaakov. Lefi Shehoya Yaakov Yodea Behem Mitzrayim Shem Shtufa Zimo. Because the Egyptian, that Yaakov knew that the Egyptians were immoral and indecent people. Couldn't find a wife there. V'hayyore shema yilmadu bonav imaseihem. And he was afraid lest his sons learn from their deeds. So therefore, he siyom kodem shayardu Mitzrayim. He made sure that they were all married before they went to Mitzrayim, where it would have been impossible to find a suitable wife. There's another context in which this phrase appears. Ishu veso bo. Ishu veso. Where is that? Chanukah. The mitzvah of Chanukah is near Ishu veso. It's the other time you find the reference. And it's a similar point. Ishu veso. So the woman is the bias. The woman is considered the home. Because the woman sets the tone of the home, and to a significant extent, much more than the man, is responsible for the happiness of the home. So near Ishu veso means the man defines the home on Chanukah as a place of persumei niso. And because of Ishu veso, so woman need not light, the wife need not light. Rather the man lights. But Ishu veso, there's a linkage between the two, that he is there and she is the home. And that's how it's perceived. So Ishu veso bo, they came with their families. They came in a family unit. And of course the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim is the Gula is the process by which a family became a nation. Alright. Now, Bischar Noshim Tzidkonios, we were redeemed as a reward for the righteous women. Well, where else do we see their righteousness? The Chizkuni mentions it at the beginning, and then in the very first parak, the first Aliyah, we see it as well in the Parsha of the Mialdos. So the Jewish people became very fecund in Mitzrayim. Women gave birth to six, the Kari Sechot, six at one time, sextuplets in each birth, which I would imagine after two or three or four such births can wear a person down, I would imagine. Now, that was the reason why the Mialedeth industry was so necessary in Egypt, because it would be impossible otherwise to deliver so many. But in a short time, less than two centuries, the Jewish people went from a nation of 70 to a nation of, including women, much larger than a million, maybe even two and a half million people. 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60. So, Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim L'Mialdos Ivriyos, the king of Egypt, it's Perek Aleph, Pasuk Tesvav, said to the Hebrew midwives, Asher Shema Achas Shifra V'Shema Shenis Puah. He said to them, one name Shifra, one name Puah. I don't understand why their names were concealed. The different opinions who they were, but why their names were concealed, why they were so named. Vayomer, and he said, Bialadchen es Ivrios urisen al havnoim, when you're delivering the Hebrew wives and you see them on the birthstool, imbein hu vamitenosom, imbasi vachoyo, if it's a male, kill it. That was kill it before it emerges. Vimbasi, if it's a girl, then the vachoya, let the girl live. Vatirena hamialdos eso elokim, velo asuk asher tiber lehen melech mitzrayim, but the mialdos feared God, they did not do what the king of Egypt wanted, vatichayenos hayiladim, and instead they let all the children live, both the males and the females. So in fact, in the end, Paro had to change his whole scheme entirely. But when he confronts them, Vayikra Melech Mitzrayim Lamialdos, Vayomer Lohen, מדוע עשיסן הדבר הזה ותחיין את הילדים? Why did you do this? Leave the children alive, leave the males alive, the boys. ותאמרנה המילדות אל פרעה, they said to Pharaoh, כי לא חנו שמצריות סביריות, the Hebrew wives, women are not like the Egyptian women. כי חיוס הנה, they're very lively, very feisty bunch. ותרם תבוא אליהן המילדות ויולדו. Before we even start to administer to them, the baby just pops out. Now clearly, this we discussed years ago, see, Pyro did not want at first to get involved into a program of extermination, because that would not sit well. Egypt was an empire, a conglomerate of many different ethnic groups. Many had come because of the famine. And if one ethnic group begins to be persecuted, the others fear that their turn will be next. That causes instability, and that threatens the kingdom. So he wanted first to reduce the influence of the Jews in a way which would be more or less surreptitious. Only a small group would know. For some reason, the boys would not live. Only girls were living. The way to do that was to enlist the services of the Mialdas. By the way, why do you want the girls to live? Wait. Marry?
Redemption.
Oh, so you could say two things. One, Mati Alon said that the way to destroy the people was to get rid of the males, because the women would just then have to marry Egyptian women. Egyptian men, rather. Women too in Egypt, but Egyptian men. And therefore, ipso facto, the nation would disappear. Right. But the other pshat is, like I said a few moments ago, had his intention been revealed at first, that he wanted to kill everybody, then it would have created a greater storm in the kingdom. And he wanted, Havan Nishak Malo, let's deal wisely with them. In other words, eliminate one group while not arousing the suspicions or the enmity of another group. Vayitav Elokim LaMialdos. So God did good by these Mialdos, rewarded them. Vayirev Ha'am Vayatzmu Ma'o. They just continued. The women did to multiply. Vayiki Arum Mialdos Esor Elokim Vayas Lahem Batim. In the end, when the women continued to fear God, Vayas Lahem Batim, so he made them homes. Not really houses, homes. Rashi says, Bote Kahuna Ulavia Umalchus, that these women were Zocha, merited having the house of the Kahuna Levia and of Malchus as well, the royalty of Israel, come from them. Okay, now, who are these? So Rashi says, right, let's get to the Gemara, because the Gemara in Sota goes into this area in a way which is a little surprising, and then raise a question which I think is the question. Because, again, we look at, it's nice that Rabbi Akiva would say, Dischar Noshim Tzidkonios, Sheva Osador, Nigalu Yisro Mimitzrayim, it's because of the righteous women. And sometimes people look at these statements as, if not platitudes, maybe even patronizing. All right, because the right? Oh, you're agreeing with me. Because the all right, good. It's down on the surface, because if you look at the story of the Torah, who are the prime movers? Moshe, Aaron, Hur at a certain point. The whole story of the Torah revolves around men. So it's like Rabbi Akiva saying, the women, it's all because of them. We don't have to talk about them. We don't have to read about them. But it's really all about them. Why? If that's the case, make that the story of the Torah. And not just to insert these casual references here to the Mialdos or in Parak Beis. So the Torah says, Vayikach Ishmi Beis Levi, Vayikach Es Bas Levi, and they're also not named. And then the sister, I think she is named, Miriam. It's the first one who's actually given a name in the Torah. Let's see. No, it just says, Vatesasav Achosomei Rachav. Is Miriam named here? No. Also, Miriam's not named.
Behind every successful man is a woman.
That's what women like to tell themselves. I know that. It's so probably true. It is true.
It is true.
In my case, it's certainly true.
Everyone.
Yes. But it's interesting they're not named. Why aren't they named? Instead of saying, Vayikach Yishmi Beis Levi, Vayikach Bas Levi, so mentions Yocheved. Instead of saying his sister, whose sister, the unnamed infant sister. Does Miriam mention her name as well? No, the Torah doesn't. Everything is in the background. Now, the Gemara says in Soto, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, okay, Darash Rav Avira, Rabbi Kiva did not make this up. Bischar Noshim Sidkonesh Oyub Osa Ador Nigalu Yisrael Mimitzrayim. It's because of the righteous women of that generation that the Jewish people were redeemed from Egypt. And he goes also into the story of the pails of water and fish, and they would come and be with the husbands. Okay. Now the Gemara continues. Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim Vlami Aldosa Ivrios, Ravu Shmuel. So who are these people? Chadomar Yisho Vito. One says it was a woman and her daughter. V'chadomar Kalo V'chamoso. And another says it was a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law. Who's the mother and daughter? That's Rashi's pshat. Rashi adopts that pshat, simple pshat. Yocheved and Miriam. Who's the Kalo V'chamoso? That's Yocheved and her daughter-in-law. In Vo'era it says that Aaron married Yocheved, the sister of Nachshon ben Aminadov. All right? Of course, it was strange, because granted, Aaron's a little precocious, but at this time, Aaron was two. And we assume he didn't marry a much older woman, so how is that possible? It could be because that's not the simple pshat that Rashi adopted mother and daughter, Yocheved and Miriam. By the way, also, there's no reason to say that these were the only Mialdos. In fact, we'd assume there are many others. But these were the leaders. Now, why they were the leaders, we'll see in a moment, but these were the leaders. What's the difference whether we say it was a woman and her daughter, which is more natural that a mother and a daughter should work together? Mother and daughter, mother-in-law, daughter-in-law? Less natural. So that would add another dimension, make it even more miraculous that they're on the same page. As Chazal say, that mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law are natural adversaries from the beginning of time to the end of time. They could have pleasant relations also, obscuring the natural enmity, but they could have friendly relations, but the nature of it, unless it's worked on, is that there is some underlying tension. So that would make it even a greater miracle that here they work together for this purpose. All right, that's that machlokas. Very good example. Tanya, Kimanda Omar, Isho Bito de Tanya, Shifra Zoyo Cheved. All right, one brisa says, like the opinion that it was a woman and her daughter, that was Yocheved. So why is she called Shifra? Lomenikra Shma Shifra, Shemeshafer Ses Havlad. She was called Shifra because she would straighten out, smooth the limbs of the baby. One of the things the Mialdos did after the baby was born, they would straighten the limbs out, wash the baby, and make sure the baby is healthy and presentable. Dover Acher, Shifra, Shepor, V'Rabbi Yisrael, B'Yomeh. All right, she's called because of her task that the Jews multiplied and increased in her day. Pua, Zo Miriam. All right, V'Lomenikra Shema, Pua. Why did the Torah call her Pua instead of Miriam? Shehoisa Poa. She was cooing to the child, also after the child was born. Or, Dover Acher. Poa, Shehoisa Poa beruach hakodesh v'omeres asida imi shetelet benjamin shiz Israel. She would cry out, proclaim with divine inspiration that my mother is going to give birth to the future savior of Israel, Moshe Rabbeinu. It is precocious. What else? Oh, you notice something? Then the Torah calls them Shifra and Pua, whether mishaferes es havlad or Poa umedaberes vehogo levlad, that she coos and talks and baby talk to calm the child, that neither of those are really the functions of the midwife. Granted, I have very little midwife experience, but my understanding is the midwife helps more the birth. So you'd think that if they had a name, their name would be called what they do before to get the woman ready for delivery and during the delivery, rather than what she does after delivery, which seems to be, at least to my untrained ear, anticlimactic, right? Am I right? Everyone has given birth, certainly more than I have. I would think afterwards it's anticlimactic. It's the preparation and the act of giving birth that really is the major focus of what the Mialdos do. And yet they're called about something after the birth, not during or before. Yes?
Back up,
all right.
Anything?
What's that?
Why are they called anything? Miriam is not just a character in the story. She's one of the most influential characters in the story coming up. But why is she not recognized here as who she's going to be?
Yes, that is true. Why isn't Miriam recognized for more than just this? Okay, you see, this
not
is the...
Not for more than this, but for who she actually is.
Right.
She is going to continue in the story.
Yes.
For that
matter, no. Says Yocheved. Yocheved gives birth to Moshe Rabbeinu. She was right. That's the other thing. That their other name, as the Gemara explains it. And by the way, when the Torah speaks of their names, again, a name is always a reference point. It's something which identifies a person, an object, a thing, an event in a way we can understand it in perhaps more than just its simplest dimensions. So that's why the Torah has names for them here also, Shifra and Puah. It's not just saying what they were called or what was written on their business card or their shingle, but rather it's conveying an idea about what they were contributing, what made them so worthy. So in addition to what they did after the child was born...
So the problem was what they said to Pharaoh, that they weren't there before birth.
Right.
They delivered very quickly before they were had a chance to get there. So their function was only after, so
that's how. Oh, I see. I mean, they weren't there. But the fact is, they were there. That was just the excuse.
I know.
Yeah. In other words, if the woman had already given birth, they're really not needed as much they needed before. What's that? Right. Right. Yes, I always wonder, you know, every now and then you read a story about someone giving birth on the way to the hospital. All right, delivered by a police officer or, what's that? Cab driver. Does the doctor get paid? That's my question. Yes. Really?
He's waiting for
you. I paid already.
Repaid.
Okay. That's Zocho Melachto Nasa de Acherim. If you're worthy, someone else does your work for you.
Operator talked through. This week, a 911 operator talked to a grandmother. It was the new baby grandmother.
Right.
How to deliver
okay.
The baby.
Yeah, so these stories happen every now and then.
Yeah, it was just
right.
About two days ago.
I could believe it. A lot of police officers have these stories. A lot of them.
Hatzalah
too. All right, so one name was about what happened afterwards, in the immediate aftermath of the birth. But the other name the Gemara mentions, Shifra Shapora Verovu Yisrael Biomeo, or Puah, that she was Poah Baruch HaKodesh, and my mother will give birth to a child, that already is talking about a different dimension. That is defining the era in which they live. They live an era for Shifra of tremendous growth for the Jewish people. They're becoming a nation. And Puah, in terms of the Geula, that they saw giving birth as part of the process of redemption. And that's what she saw. She said about her mother, Ruach HaKodesh, that her mother will give birth to the Moshiach. But they saw, they perceived in the very act of childbirth, an act of building a nation and an act of redeeming the nation as well. Now this takes us to the next point, because you see again very cryptically, Vayelech ish mi beis Levi, Vayikach es bas Levi. Oh, by the way, I just read one next point of the Gemara. The Torah says that Paro said to them that Bialadchen es Ivrios, when you they are giving birth, and they'll be Alav Noyim, im bein huva mitenosum and basi vachoyo. So if it's a boy, kill. If it's a girl, let her live. How are they supposed to know? Because again, this is taking place before the babies emerged, not after. So the Gemara says here again in Sota, Daf Yud Aleph Amid Beis, Amar Bichanino, Simon Gadol Masailahem, he gave them a great sign. Ben Panav Lamato, Bas Paneha Lamalo. The boy comes out, his face is down. The girl comes out, face up. So Paro said to them, you could tell by the nature of the emergence from the birth canal immediately whether it's a boy or a girl. The boy's looking down, the girl's looking up. Now, I don't think that's true physiologically, right? I think most of them come out face up, correct? Which sounds very optimistic. All right, hold that thought. Remember, this is not Torah. This is what Paro was telling them. But there is an idea in that message that he conveyed. Okay, so what happened here? Vayelech Ishmi Beis Levi, Vekachas Bas Levi. At a certain point, the man from the house of Levi marries Levi's daughter. So again, the Torah is enigmatic, cryptic as to who we're talking about. We're talking about Amram and Yocheved. Yocheved was Bas Levi. Now, they had been married, and the Gemara goes into that story as well. Rashi quotes it here too, that they had Paro Shoyamimena. He had separated from her Mipnei Gzeras Paro because of Paro's decree. Once Paro decreed the males should be killed, he separated, and now Hechziroi brought her back, remarried her, Vasaba Lekuchim Shnayim, married her a second time, Ve'afhi Nepcha Lios Naro, and she too, what part of the great joy? She was rejuvenated, became like a young girl again. How old was Yocheved? We know. Bas Kuf Lamet Shana Haisa. She was 130, meaning she was 40 years older than Sari Menu was when she gave birth to Yitzchak. Shenolda Bevomu Mitzrayim Ben Achamos. We know that she was the last one born of the original 70. The Torah lists in Vayigash the 70 members of Yaakov's household went down to Egypt. If you count all of them, it's only 69. The Chazal say that, yeah, Yocheved was Nolda Ben Achamos. As they're about to enter the gates of Egypt, the walls of Egypt, that's when she gave birth. How long were we in Egypt? 210 years. How old was Moshe when they left? 80. Do the math. It means she gave birth here at the age of 130. Ukshayatsu Haya Moshe ben Shmonim Shana im Kain Kishinis Abram Imenu Haisa Bas Meir Shloshim the chorus of Bas Levi. Bas Levi, 130, not too bad. Even as it is like a pshat, and he says that if that's the case, this is a greater miracle than even Sarah. It's 40 years older. Why doesn't the Torah make reference to it? Many Mepharshim knock off what the Ibn Ezra says. The Maharal is very critical. He says, why is there any greater miracle than every Jewish woman giving birth six at a time? That's also a fantastic nace. So there are many nisim happening here. If it's a nace that a woman gives birth six at one pop, then it's a nace that she gave birth at 130. It's a world of nisim. So that does not bother him. What should bother us is, what happened? Why did he have to go and marry her? Why did he divorce her to begin with? So for that, we go back to the Gemara in Soto, Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Vayelech Ishmi Beis Levi Lahechan Holach. Where did he go? Amar Rav Yehuda Barzlino Sheholach Batzaz Bito. He followed the counsel of his daughter. Tana, he was taught. Amram Gadol Hador Haya. Amram was the great one of the generation. He was the leader of the generation. Kevan Shera Shegaza Para Harasha Kala Ben Hayilod Hayaor Tasichuhu. When he saw that the evil Paro had decreed that every male child be thrown into the river, Omari said, La Shov Anu Amelin. We are toiling for nothing. We'll have children and they will be killed. Amad v'geresh es ishto. So he stood up and he divorced his wife. Amdu kulon v'geresh es nishosayim. Then everyone else followed, as the Gadol Hador does, so do the rest of us. They also divorced their wives. Now, it's not as wild as it sounds, because there is such a halacha that a person is not allowed to have a child during a Shnas Batzoras. During a famine, you can't have a child. because you're not supposed to have children during famines because it hurts everyone else. You have no food, and now you have even less food for everyone. In fact, that's why the Torah emphasizes in Mikes that when Yosef had his sons, he gave birth. Ul Yosef yulod shnei vanim, v'terem tavo shnas harav. Yosef had two sons before the famine, before the years of the famine came. And Rashi says, Mikan she'odom osu l'shamesh mitasa b'shonei ra'avon. From here we see that you can't have relations, can't procreate during a famine. During a famine, the more children you have, the less food you have for everyone. So you can't, you have to desist. So what Amram did was not unreasonable on the surface. He said, why have children that are simply going to be killed? Does it make sense? Amram, does it make sense?
Well, no, because...
Yeah? What's that?
The midwife never actually killed any children. Never carried out science.
Well, no, the decree was carried out. After he stopped using the midwives, that's what happened.
He is different.
He didn't use any midwives. They started throwing the kids in the river. That's the end of one second. That's the end of the parak. He abandoned the midwife plan and had to embark on a more open policy of extermination. Vayitzav paro l'chol amo lemor kol haben hayilod hayor tashlichu v'chol abasta chayun. So he no longer relied on the midwives. At that point, he just said, if you see an infant male, it has to be killed. Yes.
The husband separated from the wife.
Right.
Which wife being the sick
one? No, it was before. It was all before. Right. We're coming to the end, really, of the story here. You don't divorce, right. Okay. I thought you'd ask a different question, which was the question of Miriam. Amr lo bito, his daughter said to him, I think she was six at the time, five. Abba, koshek zeiros cho yosem isho paro. Your decree is worse than Paro's. Sheparo lo gozar el al zcharim. Paro decreed only against the males. Vato gozarto al zcharim al nekevos. Exactly, you're decreeing against everybody. Paro wants to eliminate the males. You want to eliminate both males and females. Paro lo gozar el olam hazeh. Paro's decrees are effective in this world. Vato be'olam hazeh ul olam haba. But your decree, not married, no children, no world, not in this or the next world, can't exist. Paro harasha sofek niskayemes gzeraso sofek ena miskayemes. Paro, the evil Paro, is doubtful whether his decree will be confirmed or not. Ato tzadik, you're righteous. Vivadei shegzerascho miskayemes. Certainly your decree will be fulfilled. Shenema vatigzar omer vayokam lo. Tzadik goes there and says, God is Micaiah. Omad, Amram heard what his daughter said. Omad vehechazirs ishto. He went and he married again his wife. The Gemara says elsewhere, or here, it's right here. Maisei likuchen hoshiva piryon. He got a big chariot and sat next to her in the chariot, and Aaron was on one side, Miriam was on the other side, singing before him, so everybody would know. Again, you follow the Gadol Hador. The Gadol Hador divorces, they divorce. The Gadol Hador remarries, everyone is going to remarry. Everyone. V'Aaron, Miriam, Mirakten Lefanel, Malchei Asharis, Amru, Eima Bonim Smecha. Okay. So, Hechzer Zishto, Amdu Kulon, V'Hechaziris Neshaseihem. And that's how the Gula took place. Of course, the question is, what was he thinking? What was Miriam thinking? I mean, we could have asked the same question. You didn't. I gave you a chance to, but you didn't. But you could have asked the same question. Paro's decree was against the males. Amram just says, all right, forget about it entirely. And then what happens? That does Paro's work for him. Because within a generation or two, there are no Jews left. The whole nation is gone. And so Paro wins. So what was Amram's thought? So granted, she can't be Meshamesh Mitasa Bishonei Ravon, understood. So the assumption is, like has happened many times in history, this evil Rasha will pass from the scene within a year or five or ten, and then life will be restored to normal. So you know, we shouldn't think that Amram assumed that this would be long-lasting, and then, you know, whatever God wants, God wants. That can't be. Now, there is a postscript to this story. There is a postscript, and that is after Moshe was born. All right? After Moshe was born, so the decree had not yet passed. And in fact, Moshe was now subject to execution. That's why they went out to she went and put him in a basket in the river. All right. So now, I think it's Gor Megillah. Now, when that happens, Miriam is confronted by her father. In fact, the Gemara says, I thought it was here and in Megillah, I just can't find it now, but the Gemara says that Amram slapped her in the face and said, now what do you say about your prophecies? Now it's worse for everybody, right? So that's why it says that she brought him, put him on al sfasayor, v'teisatzav achoso merachok, l'deo ma yeoselo. She watched from afar to see what would happen to him. Watched from afar to see really what would become of her prophecies, that she had in fact gone out on a limb. But nonetheless, in the immediate instance, it would seem that Amram was right. She was wrong. Of course, she turned out to be completely correct. But who knew that? What was more rational? To try to wait out the storm like Amram, or to force events like Miriam? In fact, it's just next up. Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Kevan shenolad Moshe nismala kol habayis kula or. When Moshe was born, the whole house filled with light. Omar Oviho uneshakar rosha. So her father, Miriam's father, stood up, kissed her on the head. Ay, my tochter, beautiful, precocious, brilliant child. Biti niskaiman of osech. My daughter, your prophecy has been fulfilled. The kevan sheitiluhu liyor. Once he was thrown into the river. Amad Aviha Vitovcha Rosha. Then her father stood up and whacked her in the head. Amar La, Biti, Hechan Nevoasech. Now where is your prophecy? Vahainu Dechsiv. Vates Atzava Chosom Erechok Lodemai Oselo. Leida Ma Yehe Besof Nevoasah. She was watching, not just about the fate of her brother, it's close to Iker, but watching what would come of her prophecy. So what do we make of this? I mean, Amram Gadol Hadar Haya, he looks like a little flighty. You know, he makes impetuous decisions. All right, no more children. Okay, we'll have children. And then he's born. Wow, you're a genius. And then he's taken into the river. You're an idiot. What kind of Gadol Hadar is that? What's he thinking? So you have a very interesting dimension here that I think qualifies and puts into perspective this concept of Bishar Noshim Tzidkonia Shabbos Sador Negali Yisroel Mitzrayim, because of the righteous women. Think back to what the Gemara said about Rabbi Chanina. Simon Gadol Masa Lohem. Rabbi Chanina taught that Paro gave a great sign to the midwives. They'll know whether it's a male or female child coming out. Bonim Ben Panav Lamata Bas Paneha Lamala. The son comes out with his face down, the girl comes out with her, the daughter comes out with her face up. What's the difference? So Paro is not telling them the physiology of childbirth. Paro is making a statement about the respective attitudes of the men and the women in this era of slavery. Ben Paneho Lamato. The men were dejected. The men were despondent. The men had their vision constricted of what the future could hold because they were the ones who were doing the work. They were feeling the blows of the Egyptians. They were the ones who were made to suffer on a daily basis. So they felt the lashes and the pain, and so they were pessimistic. And that was what influenced Amram as well. If you have a choice to put yourself in a situation of no danger or potential danger, what's more rational? No danger. Avoid the situation entirely. Give it 5 years, give it 10 years, even 15 years. Wait for the Shas HaZam to pass by us, and then we'll be able to have children without the fear of losing any of them. Women are different. Women, bas poneho lemalo. Women were looking up, that is to say. They always represent the future, the promise, the hope, the comfort. Bitachon. It's more than that. I think it's because women give life. So you tell me, most babies are born with their faces up, right? They're coming on their backs, faces up, correct? I don't know. Trust me, I don't know. Isn't that a sign of optimism? But the baby's also looking up. And the world is expectant and hopeful and filled with opportunity. Since women give life, Chava, ki hi oisa, em kochai, the potential to produce life always leaves a person optimistic. And it's the women, therefore, who have the potential to perceive life. So Amram's psak, Garador, his psak was based on the facts before him. And he's not wrong. Chas v'shalom, Zgad l'ador. Ein l'dayan, ela mashein avros. A dayan can only paskin based on the facts that are before him. Not the facts that are elsewhere, but not before. I mean, it's true in every case, right? The juries are always admonished to decide a case based on the evidence. Not what they've read in the papers, not what they think is out there, what someone might have said, but what someone did say, period. That's the evidence of the case. So the Amram is the posek, rules based on the facts that are before him. Miriam, though, made a different point to her father. And she said that he impairs not only the present, but also by extension the future as well. That if we adopt Amram's approach and extend it to its logical conclusion, then we cease to exist. And if we cease to exist, that fulfills the will of Paro, even in the short term. If you're missing a generation, if there's a lost generation of even a year, I mentioned this past Shabbos, it was the first time in my memory that there was no child or grandchild born in the shul. Every week I announce it, so I know. It's the first time in my memory, I'm talking years, where there was no child or grandchild born in this past Shabbos here. It's a lost week. So what Miriam is saying is that, granted, what makes sense, wait for the era of persecution to pass, but you don't know how long it is. What if it's 10 years? What if it's 20 years? There's a whole missing generation there. What if it's 25 years? Eventually it will pass. And eventually we will be able to overcome, no question about it. But at what cost in missing lives of Jews? We have an obligation. We do our obligation. We fulfill our will. If we fulfill our will, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu does what he is supposed to do. And that's the way the system is set up. If you've ever noticed, I've only noticed, even though I'm not a Kohen, but in Birchas Kohanim, right after Birchas Kohanim, what do the Kohanim say? Lil Tefilo. Well, we're straightening out. Ribono Shel Olam, Asinu Mashe Gazarta Aleinu. We have done what you have decreed we have to do. Afata Ase Imonu Kamoshe Tachtano. And now you do what you have promised to do. Hashkifu Mimakotcha Men Hashemayim Mavarchas Amcha Es Yisrael, etc. There is in Jewish life the notion that we can't plan the future completely. We can't micromanage events, but we're given a framework in which to live. We're given parameters that we have to observe. If we do them, so most of the time, it'll be good. Every time? Not necessarily. That's the Ratzon Hashem. But all we could say is that we have done what we are bound to do, and now you, God, Aseh K'mash Yiftachtanu, so you do what you have to do. That was Miriam's argument to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that, in fact, is a tremendous gift that they all had. That's what Shifra had, that's what Puah, Yocheved, Miriam, to raise the spirits. That's the women in the fields, in the Medrash of Rabbi Akiva, and the Gemara of Rabbi Avira as well, to go out into the fields and lift the despondency from their husbands, to give them what to live for, despite the harshness of present circumstances, the mirrors, for example, that I mentioned, that they should see themselves not just as slaves of Paro, but as virile, attractive men to their wives. If the wives don't see them in their decrepit state, but the wives see them for who they really are, that all that was a preparation for the geula. In fact, I think when we discussed the mirrors a few years ago, I said, what do mirrors do? Why do we use mirrors? What are you looking for in mirrors?
I wish we were good.
You look good, but for what purpose? Before you go out somewhere.
To face the public.
Before, exactly. Before you go out, so you want to make sure that everything is in order. I don't have a problem. You want to make sure everything's in order before you go out. It's a preparatory act. That's what the kior was also. What was the kior? It's preparation for the avodah. Right before, the kohanim had to wash their face, their hands, their feet, to make sure, the hands and feet, to make sure that they were in order. Mirrors are that preparation for something that's more important in both contexts. What the women did here was prepare the groundwork for the geula. So you see, it's not patronizing. It's exactly opposite. If you look at the story, and the Torah doesn't simply tell us stories, if you look at the stories of the Mialdos, of Yocheved and Amram, of Miriam and Amram, of Miriam at the sea, and the women throughout the whole period of slavery, and even afterwards, we see the greatest Mesiris Nefesh, the greatest sense of optimism that a Jew could have in the darkest time. And without that optimism, there really is no hope for the future. Now this is a reflection on the Mialdos. Remember, the Gemara said that they were named for what they did afterwards, not before. Shemeshifra, Shemeshaferes es Havlad, Puah, Shepoah to the child, she cries and coos, Soekes to the child, to try to make the child calm down. They were different, by the way. Meshaferes es Havlad means one cared for the physical needs of the child afterwards. Poa means that she cared for the emotional needs of the child afterwards. And it's very subtle what they did. The Mayaledes really has a technical task of ushering the baby into the world. That's really, you know, that's plumbing. But what happens afterwards, that's really what's most important. And that's where the Mayaldos here had their greatest influence. Like really parents have, or the mother has the greatest influence on the child. It's in ways that are not necessarily seen or publicized or prominent, but rather it's in small things. It's the food, it's the drink, it's the sleep, it's the song, it's the comfort. All those things happen afterwards, because afterwards is going to be more important than anything that came before. I laugh because I always say after Bris and Shul, the father is, you know, what's that? No. He's actually relieved that it's over, and there's a sense of joy, and I wish him mazel tov, and I would say to him, now the hard part begins. The bris is one thing, but now you have to raise them. That's really the hard part. But that comes afterwards. That's the hard part. And that's why the bracha that you see were given to the Mialdos, Vayash Lahem Batim, which Yocheved and Miriam, Kahuna Leviyah and Malchus, Miriam was an ancestress of Melch Yisrael through her husband. Why? Because all these are institutions which shaped Jewish life until today, Kahuna, Levi, Malchus. And you see, they were so named not because you would think if the most important thing they did was keep them alive, not kill them, so call them, you know, Chaya or something like that, life, or, you know, the defiant ones, the rebels against Paro. No. That's the motivation. But what they did in terms of Mishaferes, in terms of Poes Avlad, that really made Jewish women think that there is hope. That despite the pain of the moment, which of course is childbirth, there's greater happiness and relief and comfort and joy in the future. That is Bischar Noshim Sidkanios, Nigal Yisro Mitzrayim. That really is Bischar. You need the foundation on which the edifice of Geula is built. If the foundation is not there, it's not going to be built. And that really is the point that Chazal are making. So Chas Hashem, it's not a platitude. If you just look at the Torah and see, you know, what Moshe did and Aaron did, it's like just reading the headlines of a newspaper and not seeing the analysis, not seeing the background, even missing the substance of the text. The substance of what was happening is given to us where Chazal perceived even every vignette that took place in the Torah. Every vignette points to a beautiful tapestry of redemption without even one element could not have taken place as it did. That's the great tzar of the women in that generation, and I dare say, without being platitudinous, that's the role of women in every generation as well. All right, I thank you all very much.
Thank you.
This is no class next week.